Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a partly sunny 70 degrees and very comfortable here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show 21st Century Cures, Bill Gates, Mosquitoes, and Gene Drive Extinction. And yeah, we read about Bill Gates now doubling down on his investment in curing quote-unquote malaria by funding genetically modified mosquitoes. Good old Billy has been involved in a lot of genetic modification lately. We mentioned his malaria goats, and yeah, you can still find the story on malaria goats. I saw Texas A&M University was involved in that abhorration. We also looked at them being able to combat all of these new, never-before-seen diseases by being able to splice and dice things. I mean, there are new creations coming out on a daily basis, and science is coming up with wondrous cures utilizing changes to genomics in creatures, soon to be you. Of course, we've talked about CRISPRing humans, synthetic immune systems, CRISPRing food, plants, animals. Now we're going to let the mosquitoes go. We also have people such as Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Google. Google's very involved in a lot of this innovation as well. Tech billionaires trying to find ways to bridge the gap between disease and death. And of course, it's all about longevity medicine, but this all comes back to one central theme, and that is what they have called precision medicine. There was a precision medicine initiative last year passed by the White House, and there have been lots of these. We read about the executive order for combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Now, of course, it is everywhere, and we need to come up with new ways to combat these. Let's splice and dice some bacteria to produce drugs that might be able to combat these never-before-seen superbugs. And we have them splicing and dicing things such as the 1918 killer flu to see if they could make it more dangerous. I mean, where's that going to leave us? Well, problem, reaction, solution. It's what it always comes down to. Back, let's see when the date on this was. It doesn't have a date, but it's on National Institute of Health website. Precision Medicine Initiative. And remember, we had read about the cohort program, and that is a new piece of this precision medicine to get you to step right up, to get you to check that box, to get you to do your genomics, because, hey, we can tell all kinds of things about you, tell what's wrong, and we've gotten to the point now where we can fix you. You know, we always used to think when we were kids that if things went wrong, that we'd be able to go to the doctor and they could, like, push a button and make it all better, but we learned as we got older that no, that isn't the way it works. If you spend a lifetime of neglect, it's going to be very difficult to push a button and fix you. Well, 21st century George Jetson medicine is here now, because it might actually get to that point at some point in the future, but the first step is to give up that DNA so we could take a look at what's inside of you and what's broken, and then we'll figure out a way to fix it. January 20th, 2015, Obama announced the Precision Medicine Initiative, more affectionately known as PMI, in his State of the Union address. And through advances in research, technology, and policies that empower patients, the PMI will enable a new era of medicine in which researchers, providers, and patients, yeah, it's all about the patient, work together to develop individualized care. Now, let's take a step forward to look at this new 21st Century Cures Act. It was put out there back in 2015 to, I don't remember if it was the House or the Senate. I believe it was the Senate. Representative Fred Upton, Republican from Michigan, had sponsored the bill. And they pushed this 21st Century Cures Act out there to be able to make it easier in the name of precision medicine. We have all these wondrous cures that are potentially out there in laboratories across the planet. Big pharmaceutical companies working very closely with universities who had sprinkled funding from organizations such as DARPA to develop new genomic technologies, all in the name of national security. Of course, remember, we had the head of one of the big intelligence agencies coming out in front of the National Security Council back about a month ago saying how gene editing has now become a weapon of mass destruction. So all in the name of keeping us safe, we better find a way to speed innovation. You know, don't worry about the fact that the pharmaceutical corporations are working with the genetic mad scientists and DARPA all together and spinning out little IPOs to be able to then go in and zip and unzip the very structures that make life and turn it into whatever they want. No, don't worry about that. Worry about the fact that we'll be able to cure your cancer. Aunt Bessie will not have that big, huge bulge on her back anymore. And little Susie will be able to see again. We'll be able to fix you at a micro level, at a nano scale. We'll be able to cure death as a disease, as Kurzweil had always envisioned. Well, this 21st Century Cures Act is sitting now in front of, I'm not really sure, it passed the Senate, latest action, received in the Senate, so it must have passed the House, read twice and referred to the Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pension. And I just read, we covered the story yesterday, looks like this may be up for a new vote now in September. And yesterday while we were doing the show, I wanted to find the video that the Energy and Commerce group in the House had released. And this is this Fred Upton and some other chick, I don't remember her name. She's another House representative. But they had done this video about how wonderful the 21st Century Cures Act is. And I can guarantee you these people are probably invested some way, shape, or form in the pharmaceutical agencies or some of this precision medicine, splicing and dicing gut bacteria. And one of the big pushes of this bill is to circumvent the FDA. Now, we've discussed before, I mean, there are many fraudulent studies that are published. The FDA, who is supposed to be the watchdog, wink, hasn't been pushing anyone to redact fraudulent research. We found out that a good part of the research that's out there, even in peer-reviewed journals, potentially has incorrect information. But don't worry about that. Because you know what? It's all about pushing the cures out to the people instead of having that pesky FDA in the way. So let's listen to the spin on the 21st Century Cures Act and how great it's going to be for you and Nana.
Well, hello there. I'm Fred Upton.
And I'm Diana DeGette.
And I'm a Republican from Michigan.
And I'm a Democrat from Colorado.
You know, we know that you've probably heard a lot about the gridlock, dysfunction, and division in Congress, for sure.
It's true. We do have our differences. Fred and I don't agree on everything, but we do agree on this. America can be, it must be, the healthcare innovation capital of the world.
Now, one of the things I want to point out is, remember Obama coming out when he introduced this precision medicine initiative? That's what he said. This is going to be the new economic engine for America. It's going to be high-tech science and splicing and dicing our own people, all in the name of clinical trials and running case studies. Screw the FDA. Screw the drug and device development approval. We're just going to do it on the fly. You know, we read yesterday that they literally don't know how this is going to affect us in the future at all. We're just learning to understand how evolution, how ecology, how the different layers of this wonderful thing that we call an ecosystem work together. But hey, screw it, man. Let's just have some lunatics who are all fueled by fame and fortune start recreating things in the way that they think that they should be, not in the way that they actually are, because they're already deciding that things the way they are defective. Got to make them perfect. And we're going to tell you what the definition of perfect is.
You know, you may not realize it, but together we have already accomplished a lot to improve public health with a whole number of bills supporting medical research enacted over the last couple of years. I'm also proud to say that I helped lead the charge back in the 1990s, bipartisan effort, to double the funding of the National Institutes of Health.
This is a good start, but now it's time to go bigger.
Now it's time to set the world on fire.
You know, in the 21st century, healthcare innovation is happening at lightning speed. From the mapping of the human genome to the risk of personalized medicines that are linked to advances in molecular medicine, we've seen constant breakthroughs that are changing the face of disease treatment, management, and certainly cures.
We're turning you into the free R&D line item budget. We are giving you away for free to the pharmaceutical companies to be able to experiment on, and in exchange, you will get to be cyborg.
Health research is moving quickly, but the federal drug and device approval apparatus is still, in many ways, the relic of another era. We have dedicated scientists and bold leaders at agencies like the NIH and the FDA. But when our laws don't keep pace with innovation, we all lose out.
Damn those FDA laws requiring approval for usage of new and innovative, life-changing, gene-changing devices and medications.
So if we want to save more lives, and we do, and keep the country the leader in medical innovation and the jobs here, we've got to make sure that there's not a major gap between the science of cures and the way that we actually regulate these therapies.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ever. We in Congress are going to take a comprehensive look at what steps we can take to accelerate the pace of cures in America. We're looking at the full arc of this process, from the discovery of clues in basic science, to streamlining the drug and device development process, to unleashing the power of digital medicine and social media at the treatment delivery phase.
And social media, we're going to spin it to you and get you to open your arms, because we are all invested in these companies. We want to be part of that millionaire team in Congress. So don't disappoint us, American people. Step right up for your 21st century cure.
You know, all of that is so exciting, but we know that we don't have all the answers. That's why we're asking questions first.
That's why we need you to be the guinea pig.
We want to listen, and we are. We want to know how to close the gaps between advances in scientific knowledge about cures and the regulatory policies that are created to save more lives.
How can we make sure our best scientists spend more of their time in the laboratory discovering cures rather than just writing grant proposals?
Well, how do we guarantee that our scientists get to be mad scientists and not have to worry about that pesky approval process or any type of safety testing? And that's literally what they are saying.
And how can we foster even more collaboration using new technological resources like cloud computing or social media?
Are there new ways to improve the process of developing and approving new drugs and devices?
You know, our understanding of disease at the genetic level can certainly help reduce the costs and quicken the pace of clinical trials.
Yes, get right out in front and be one of the first CRISPRed humans.
That means patients potentially have faster access to those treatments. What do we need to make this happen?
Keep things moving and constantly improving. We must then capture the impact of these new drugs and devices and share that data with researchers, caregivers, and patients.
The cohort program.
Working together, that'll ensure that the discovery process continues to move forward, constantly improving and learning.
Right, because we're making the bottom line for the pharmaceutical companies for research and development near zero. So they got all this money now that they can just blow on mad science research, and they don't have to worry about any of those regulatory laws that we have in place right now. That's really causing them to go overseas to places like China and other countries where they don't have stringent laws on experimenting on the population.
And by this collaborative effort, asking these important questions and constantly challenging ourselves to always be doing more and doing better, we can put America on a swift trajectory to make the predominant diseases of today a thing of the past.
First discovery, then development, then delivery, and back again to discovery. We must never cease. Our efforts for 21st century cures is now underway.
And let that be a caution to you, because it is now underway. They have been rolling this stuff out now for probably the last year or so at a breakneck pace. Every single day we come across some other new insanity. We had read yesterday about the new little nanowires being implanted into a mouse's brain for months on end to be able to monitor brain waves. Now, don't forget, as part of this precision medicine initiative, we also have the brain initiative, and that is another thing that Obama came out and had a White House edict to put the White House might behind it and make it a new initiative for the country. We have DARPA, who is awarding $32 million to bolster DNA design and manufacturing at the Broad Institute. We have 23andMe that's working with the National Institute of Health with a $1.4 million grant to build out a database of, check that box, DNA information of cohort program colluders. We have Elon Musk, of course. I mentioned him yesterday. Now, funding a project to be able to monitor brains with this new brain hacking technology. And we have thought-controlled nanobots inside of a cockroach being able to manipulate that organism. They have been talking about utilizing nanobots or even these DNA nanobots or even bacteria that has been genetically altered to produce drugs inside of you. And this is all part of this precision, quote unquote, precision medicine initiative. I got the bill up in front of me. I actually see on YouTube right now, it looks like this subcommittee and Energy and Commerce has something live going on right at this moment, but I'm not going to let that distract me. I'll have to see if I can catch it later. All right, let's take a look at a couple things under development. So part of this is, of course, advancement of precision medicine and patient-focused drug development. Yeah, patient-focused, such as little bacteria in your gut from a company called something like Synlogix, with some funding from Bill Melinda Gates Foundation, to be able to tamp down on inflammation in your gut. We read about them quite a number of times now. We want expedited patient access as well. Screw the FDA approval. If you're sick and you want it, and you're in a hospital, and you fit the criteria of what we need for our experiment, step right up, people. We will get you on the list. Antibiotic drug development, of course, we have superbugs running the show right now, and we need stronger, bigger, nastier antibiotics. And a lot of these antibiotics aren't going to be traditional antibiotics anymore. They're going to find ways to be able to gene modify and cause them to become inert as opposed to killing them. Another section of this is, of course, vaccine access and innovation. A lot of these new vaccines aren't really vaccines like we saw in the case of some of the shape-shifting immune system documentation we've read. There are four different projects going on. These are all called quote-unquote vaccines, but they are really not vaccines in the traditional sense. These are not something that's going to be giving you a pathogen so your own immune system would recognize it and form a defense. Oh no, these would be creating an artificial immune system that would be able to, on the fly, recognize, quarantine, and build a new defense. I guess that's similar to the way the traditional immune system worked, except this would have synthetic biology, some sort of programmed microbes or T cells or CRISPRed body parts, DNA, that have been put into you, that then is the sentry that watches for quote-unquote infection. But these things can also go in and manipulate within your body, make changes on the fly. I mean, the one thing that is so insane about all of this is if we get rid of even the smallest bit of oversight, we have mad scientists in charge. And not that they aren't already in charge, but at least there is some sort of semblance of regulation going on right now. They are looking to sell us lock, stock, and barrel to the pharmaceutical industry in the name of technological innovation. We have them also looking to streamline clinical trials, so don't worry about it. We'll just put a posting out on the internet and social media. We'll run it through your search queries that we've been tracking through Facebook or some other social application that you've been logged into, where we can bag and tag you. And we'll start advertising clinical trials direct to you that we've, of course, had the pharmaceutical agencies pay us a monthly service to be able to do, to give them access to that database, software as a service. But don't worry about it, because it'll be in the name of precision medicine and directed advertisements to you, because we know so much about you now. You were searching for psoriasis, and now look, there is a psoriasis clinical trial. And I don't know, I'm just making that up, but I mean, I've seen it. I don't know how many times I've gone out and searched something, and all of a sudden, bing, here I'm getting ads for it. And it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to see clinical trials popping up next as all of our electronic medical health records get online. Those databases are all put under the guise of the cohort program. Go along with all of our DNA info for all those people who wanted to find out whether or not Nana was part of the aristocracy at some point in the past. Nana's bloodline. We also have telemedicine. And telemedicine back in the day when I was still doing engineering, and I've seen a few Pigmine videos that have shown that same technology. We have these little remote control robots, and they pretty much are just a set of two or four wheels. I would probably say four wheels for stability, with some mounting poles and then a small little ruggedized LCD panel that then a doctor remotely can zoom around. I don't know, he probably has some sort of building blueprint of the hospital of where he is, and he can zoom around on a floor and go from room to room and actually interact with the patient via two-way video camera and communication. And he could be sitting at his desk wherever, seeing patients at 20 different hospitals along the day. Actually, it's a pretty neat concept. But on the other hand, you know, we are talking about taking who that doctor used to be. And I mean, way back in the day, I actually have had two or three doctors in my lifetime who I actually trusted. Two or three doctors who are no longer, and actually I can think of two right off the top of my head, who are no longer in the medical field. They've gone off to do other things like writing and journals and things, but not in the actual hands-on practicing doctor field anymore. Because of some of the things that were happening back 20 years ago, where you had to answer to the insurance companies, where you had to give a treatment to a patient that wasn't necessarily the best treatment that you would have given as the doctor who was supposed to be the professional that you went to school for to learn how to cure people. But damn you, doctor, you don't know better, because guess what? It's too expensive and the insurance company will not approve that treatment. And these doctors, I mean, they were about my age, maybe a little bit older, but we all became friends. I mean, I was an IT person, and they were being forced into turning their small practice into a business. which they never had to go to business school. They had to get a network in their office because there was an edict called the Electronic Medical Health Records that was coming down the pike and threatening their livelihood. And their livelihood was based upon what they had thought was going to school to help people. And it became very sad when they realized that everything they'd gone to school for and everything that they had imagined that their career would be and what they would be doing in the future didn't quite turn out that way. Well, now we have gone the next step. Now, electronic medical health records is in full swing, and that has turned into telemedicine. So a doctor can access your records electronically from anywhere that you are, so could others if it's deemed necessary, including the health insurance companies, potentially even the life insurance companies at some point in the future. We read about a loophole that I had discovered in some of my research, and it never really got a lot of press, but I've found it a few times since I've brought it up, that there is not a protection. You know, you think HIPAA, that Health Insurance Portability Act that was passed in like 2008, was supposed to protect your private records from outside entities unless they had your approval, because everything that you spoke with about your health with your doctor and your treatment was considered confidential. Well, that is not the case anymore. After Sandy Hook, Obama made a big push to circumvent some of those pesky electronic medical protections. Because, of course, you might have access to a firearm or something, and your doctor had the ethical responsibility to report you if you had some mental health issues. And so they have now weakened the Health Insurance Portability Act. And there's a loophole that if you have some sort of genetic testing done, that life insurance companies might actually have access to that data and not be barred from denying you coverage because they see that there is a genetic anomaly that might make you more prone to, say, oh, I don't know, cancer of some kind. Just be aware of that. You could do a search on it. I'll see when I do the notes today if I can actually find one of those stories again. But I know it's in the notes of an old story, so I will definitely find it. They also are looking at, as part of this 21st Century Cures Act, reforming Medicare, Medicaid, and other different medical insurances. Now, it makes you wonder, as part of Obamacare, you know, we looked at Obamacare as another part of this big puzzle, which is weakening any type of protections, putting you under the guise of federal oversight in one grand database. It's kind of the big rope that pulls the bag closed. Now, we looked yesterday, like I said, at the Brain Initiative and some of this brain hacking and some of the rich tech billionaires getting involved in different types of 21st century cures. Remember, a lot of this medicine is being funded and fueled by taxpayer dollars at organizations all across the board, in the gamut from universities to hospitals, big pharma, government agencies, all on a global scale. Well, we have this insane technology that they have been tinkering with on the books. I promised we were going to talk about this yesterday. We never made it here, so I think this is where we're going to kick it off. Peter Thiel, who is another rich longevity medicine lunatic, really wants to invest in a technology called parabiosis, and they have been looking at parabiosis at least since the 1800s, but we've seen proof that maybe it was even way before that. But now he's looking at it at a 21st century, quote-unquote, cures perspective, where they could take young blood out of young living organisms and put it into an older organism, and it actually changes the old organism into a younger organism and the younger organism into an older organism. This is a story from, is there even a date on this? I know this was not too long ago, within the last month or so. Peter Thiel is very, very interested in young people's blood. The contrarian venture capitalist believes transfusions may hold the key to his dream of what? Oh, living forever. Yes. Guys, that's what it all comes down to. You know, this investment and this grand investment in precision medicine is not about you. It is not about the future of our children or making us better. It is about making the people who can eventually pay for it live forever. And I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but I don't think it is too crazy. More than anything, Peter Thiel, the billionaire technology investor and Donald Trump supporter, wants to find a way to escape death. He's channeled millions of dollars into a startup working on anti-aging medicine, spends considerable time and money researching therapies for his personal use, and believes society ought to open its mind to life extension methods that sound weird or unsavory. Really? Yeah. Speaking of weird and unsavory, if there is one thing that really excites Peter Thiel, it is the prospect of having younger people's blood transfused into his own veins. Lock up your children and run. Holy shit, can you even believe? And this is in Inc.com's magazine. The practice is known as parabiosis, and according to Thiel, it's potential biological fountain of youth, the closest thing science has discovered to anti-aging panacea. Research into parabiosis, they say in this story, began in the 1850s, but we found differently, at least in the 1800s, with crude experiments that involved cutting rats open and stitching their circulatory systems together. And I've pointed this out in chat, but if you want to take a look at parabiosis, just plug it into Google and hit the image search tab, and you will see some pretty gruesome photos. It's P-A-R-A-B-I-O-S-I-S, parabiosis. And after decades of languishing on the fringes, it recently started getting attention from mainstream researchers with multiple clinical trials, ding, ding, already underway in the U.S. and even more advanced studies in places where they don't have regulatory agencies like China and Korea. Considering the science fiction promise of parabiosis, the studies have received notably little fanfare, yeah, because it's like so freaky insane. You know, we think back to some of the quote-unquote rumors we had heard about elite sucking young blood to stay young forever, but this shit really might not be too off the crazy rails, which is even more frightening than thinking about lizard people sucking blood. I mean, what? This is insane. So what, they are sucking children's blood to stay young? But Thiel has been watching this technology closely. In Montgomery, California, about 120 miles from San Francisco, a company called Ambrosia, which is disgusting, recently commenced one of its trials titled, quote, Young Donor Plasma Transfusion and Age-Related Biomarkers. It is a simple protocol. Healthy participants age 35 and older get a transfusion of blood plasma from donors under 25, and researchers monitor their blood over the next 2 years for molecular indicators of health and aging. The study is patient-funded, and participants, so people with money, and participants who range in age from late 30s through their 80s must pay $8,000 to take part and live in or travel into Monterey for treatments and follow-up assessments. Ambrosia's founder, the Stanford-trained physician Jesse Karsmazin, has been studying aging for more than a decade. He became interested in launching a company around parabiosis after seeing impressive data from animals and studies conducted abroad in humans. And in one trial after another, subjects who experienced a reversal of aging symptoms across every major organ system. And while the mechanisms at play are not totally understood, he said, young organisms' blood not only contains all sorts of proteins that improve cell function, but somehow it also prompts the recipient's body to increase production of those proteins. The effect seems to be an almost permanent effect, and it is almost like it is resetting the gene expression. Now, guys, if this isn't lunacy, I don't know what is. I mean, if you just look at it from a common sense perspective, I guess. I mean, if there are proteins that tend to degrade as we get older in our bloodstream that cause aging, and I mean organ aging, it says it is across the board, and we can just take those proteins and re-inject them into us like a daily nutritional supplement, that's pretty incredible. But do you think that they're going to give ambrosia to the entire population of the planet? You think we're going to get ambrosia for everyone over 35? Take your ambrosia pill to live forever. Because you useless eaters out there deserve to live forever. I don't think so. This is not going to be for us, people. And while ambrosia advertised the study to attract participants, it did not seek broader coverage. So Karzmazian was somewhat surprised when he got a message from Jason Kam, chief medical officer at Thiel Capital, ding, ding, yes, an investment group, who expressed interest in what the company was doing. Kasman says that he has not reached out to any investors. I really didn't want to talk about what the business model would be. He just wanted paying customers. Although his LinkedIn profile identifies him as an angel investor, that's not Cam's primary job. An osteopath with a background in treatment of elite athletes, Cam is, quote, personal health director to Peter Thiel and a number of other prominent Silicon Valley business leaders and investors. Ding, 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 ding. Yes, rich tech billionaires who want to live forever. I've said it so many times. Here we go, guys. They found their angel called Ambrosia. He enables his clients to make radical breakthroughs in their immediate day-to-day health, cognitive functioning, and physical performance, all of which increase the prospects for optimal health and significant lifespan extension, unquote. Among his duties at Thiel Capital is this, quote, communicates with a number of the world's best physicians, healthcare professionals, and researchers in the U.S., Europe, and the Middle East on life extension, optimizing blood markers and novel techniques to improve health. When I interviewed, and this is the guy from Inc. magazine, when I interviewed Thiel a year ago about his investments in biotech and life extension medicine, I asked him what health interventions he found compelling enough to incorporate into his own life. Quote, there are all these things that I've looked into doing, and I haven't quite started yet, he told me, adding that he is always really uncomfortable giving general advice out on this stuff. Yeah, it's called a lawsuit. I suspect that we're a little too biased against all of these things in society, he told me. And yeah, I don't want it to hurt my bottom line by sounding like a crazy person. But after briefly discussing the pros and cons of caloric restriction, which I've read a lot about that, it's one of the things I was just discussing with a friend the other day. Some people say extra protein is a marker to longevity for muscle mass and that. And others say caloric restriction is the more you eat, the slower you get and the faster you age. So I don't know. I think the jury is still out on that one. There's research showing both sides of the spectrum. But after briefly discussing the pros and cons of caloric restriction, human growth hormone, that is another treatment that I've read about, as well as diabetes drug metformin, which I have not read about that at all, Thiel says this, quote, I am not convinced yet that we have found a single panacea that works. It is possible that there exists a single point where things could work, and I am into parabiosis stuff, which I think is really interesting, he says. This is where they did the young blood into older mice, and they found that it had a massive rejuvenating effect. And so that is one that, well, again, it is one of these very odd things that where people had done these studies in the 50s, which I said we found even earlier, like 1800s and before, and then they got it dropped altogether. I think that there are a lot of things that have been strangely underexplored, yeah, or dropped altogether because there were rich people that already found that it worked, and so they hid the studies. I mean, who knows? But it sounds pretty insane. I followed up, and this is the writer of the story, to ask if he meant parabiosis was really interesting as a business opportunity or as a personal health treatment, and he made it clear that he was talking about the latter, that it would be one where it's more just, we don't think the science works. Some of these, it's not clear whether there's actually a great company to be started around it, and it may just be that it's not necessarily patentable, you know, of course, to make money. The parabiosis would not require... And there is no FDA approval needed because it's just blood transfusion. So that's insane. So again, circumventing the FDA very conveniently. And remember, too, we read very recently about the synthetic blood that they are working on as well that can cure all kinds of diseases. I wonder if they have looked with their new X and Y DNA amino acids and proteins that they've been working on, if they have come up with any type of treatments to make old blood young and young blood old again. There are widespread rumors in Silicon Valley where life extension science is a popular obsession. Of course, we also have Google's life sciences division with lots of famous scientists who have gone over there, as well as good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, is over there as well, working on mad science gone mad and longevity medicine. It's where Kurzweil talked about the nanoblots in your blood as well to cure death as a disease. But this popular obsession in Silicon Valley, the various wealthy individuals from the tech world have already begun practicing parabiosis, sending tens of thousands of dollars for the procedure and for young person blood. This is nuts. And repeatedly, the exercise... Several times a year, and in our April 2015 interview, Theo was seemingly explicit that parabiosis was something he had not quite started yet. But I guess that's something that in a year and a half, he probably has sought. Anyone seeking the practice of parabiosis privately would quickly encounter the question of where to obtain sufficient quantities of young people's blood. But human blood is not available for purchase to just anybody. Oh my God, I can't believe we're reading this. A spokesperson for the Food and Drug Administration says that the agency, quote unquote, regulates the collection and manufacture of blood and blood components to help protect the health of the blood donor and to ensure the safety and the purity and the potency of the blood product. And while it is not approved specifically for anti-aging treatments like other drugs, it can be prescribed for so-called off-label uses as long as there is no advertising or efficacy claims involved. So if you go to your doctor and ask them to prescribe you young blood, I guess you could potentially go ask for young blood. Is that what they are saying here? Clinical trials like Ambrosia can get blood from banks fairly easily for that purpose, but Ambrosia is a for-profit company. For if it began selling transfusions as a service to patient clients like Thiel, it would presumably need to figure out a source other than non-profit blood banks. Oh, my God. So now we're going to have people on the street. Step right up. I'll pay you $50 for your 25 and under blood per pint. And they're probably going to make what? They're making $8,000 per transfusion. I wonder how much blood that is. Maybe you know, Hammy. That's pretty crazy. How much blood does a human body hold to be able to do a full transfusion? Karmazian acknowledges that the potential supply issue is a problem, but notes that plasma is relatively abundant and has a two-year shelf life. He speculates that a surge of popular attention for parabiosis might inspire more blood donations by young donors whose blood tends to provide greater benefits when administered in more conventional therapeutic transfusions. And for Thiel, the day when technologies like parabiosis are not only clinically provable, but socially accepted can't come soon enough. After all, he is not getting any younger. So there you go. Peter Thiel and his investment guy. So 5 to 7 quarts, 6 quarts. So I don't know. Young people, there might be a new way. If robots take all the jobs, you might be able to transfuse your blood and sell it to rich people for longevity medicine. Like, how crazy is that? That's going to be a job of the 21st century, is as blood donor. There's another story. I guess we might as well clean up some of these tabs. My computers are all getting slow, so I'm going to have to close some of these soon. Another story that came out not too long ago, August 31st, so 2 weeks ago, we had talked about some new technologies having to do with the ElectRx program and some of the more research that DARPA has done using electrical zaps and frequencies to be able to manipulate that vagus nerve that runs as a direct connect from the gut to the brain, can influence different brain chemicals, pushing buttons and sending in certain frequencies to be able to cause an effect in the human body. Well, there were a pair of headphones from a company called Nirvana with an E that were dopamine headphones, and it caused a certain frequency to be produced and put in through that vagus nerve in the ear to produce dopamine and get you as high as a kite. We also read that there was brain zapping going on by athletes. They stated that zapping at a certain frequency would improve their physical performance. And I was questioning the wisdom of any of these technologies and telling people, don't try this at home. Pretty insane. Well, listen to this. Brain zapping gadgets need regulation, you think? Say scientists and some of the manufacturers. Just a few days ago in August, the idea of electrically stimulating your brain in the comfort of your own home would have sounded pretty weird, and sure it does, and probably like a bad idea, exactly what I said. But the practice of brain zapping, in particular, an easy-to-pull-off technique called transcranial direct current stimulation, small T, capital D, C, S, poor an acronym, has quickly advanced from DARPA's labs. It doesn't say that, but that's where they were messing around with this, all in the name of curing things like Parkinson's, to your living room. And DIYers are building their own devices and trading tips online while startups are bringing out consumer products. I mean, what kind of a world are we in when we are talking about transfusing young blood into old, splicing and dicing our own DIY genomes, and now making your own DIY electrical brain zapping devices for your living room? Guys, what kind of a world are our children going to live in? This is beyond insane. I mean, what happened to people experimenting with pot and LSD? We are talking about experimenting with different physical systems that could potentially cause permanent damage. With that as a backdrop, a group of neuroscientists and manufacturers met in New York City on Sunday, August 28th, to discuss potential regulations for brain-stimulating devices sold directly to consumers. Neuromodulation is already here. It's on Amazon, and its coverage was covered over the Olympics and elsewhere. Yeah, like I said, what a great way to launch it. Talking about it during the Olympics as some way to improve your physical performance. Every Joe Schmo is going to want their own brain zapping device. But there is not a massive cohesive message from scientists or the industry about regulations. And as a community, we are behind, they say. This group agreed on Sunday to suggest guidelines to the Food and Drug Administration for brain zapping, which sets rules for medical devices. And the FDA has been discussing the possibility of regulating neurotech for at least the last 2 years. And while this small TDCS isn't the only type of non-invasive brain stimulation, it's the simplest. The user just pushes a couple of electrodes onto their scalp to send a tiny amount of electrical current to the specific region of the brain. And the effects depend most obviously on where the electrodes are placed. Do not try this at home. I take no responsibility for any idiot who does this, okay? This is not a recommendation. This is a caution. But also, it depends on the factors such as the current amplitude, stimulation duration, and the existing conditions in the user's brain. Neuroscientists are testing direct cranial stimulation effects on every neural and psychological disorder you can imagine. Of course they are. And they are also investigating its effect on cognition, emotion, and behavior. Time for your little zippity zip zip zap. You are having defective thoughts there, Johnny. It is fair to say that it is a hot topic of research. The chart that they have at the right, which shows an upward trend from the PubMed database, shows the number of papers published on direct cranial stimulation over the years. And in 1989, there were only 2 papers published. Last year, there were 608. In Europe, direct cranial stimulation was recently approved for depression and chronic pain. And while the FDA has yet to follow suit and approve its use in the United States for medical conditions, such a move seems inevitable, especially if you take a look at the 21st Century Cures Act, is what I'm thinking. And since direct cranial stimulation can be easily administered by a portable device, well, let's give it up. Clinicians are already thinking about how at-home medical use could be safely permitted. At their meeting on Sunday, several researchers explained how at-home clinical treatment could work. Physicians themselves could remotely control the dosage by providing a unique key code for each stimulation session that allows activation of the device and could use something such as Skype. What? What? Skype, that's owned by Microsoft, to supervise patients as they are familiarizing themselves with the gear. Researchers could also, they also stress the need for a standardization of devices that position the electrodes properly on the user's head. But consumers using products they buy on Amazon need a different set of protections, says one of the participants to IEEE Spectrum, which is the publication we're reading, in an interview. Some of the first products that came on the market made inaccurate claims about their benefits, and the manufacturers made statements based on scientific studies that used research-grade direct cranial stimulation equipment under carefully controlled conditions, but these companies hadn't carried out the same studies using their own products, so they just rubber-stamped everything, just like they do for GMOs. The group's guidelines also recommend that people with neural or psychiatric conditions consult their physicians before using any brain-stimulating gadget. Well, thank goodness. Oh, my God. Our world has gone mad, people. So make sure you get your direct cranial zap and then go to the polls in November. Maybe Hillary has been messing around with direct cranial stimulation. The categories include, or maybe she got some bad blood. The categories include people with conditions like depression, anxiety, and addiction. Those who are already turning to DIY treatments using homemade or commercially available direct cranial stimulation rigs as well. And finally, they recommended that neuromodulation devices not be used by children. Well, I would have to say that would be a pretty good recommendation unless the physician explicitly recommended the use. Oh, my God. You're at home, zippity-zap your child. They got ADD. All fixed. This is just complete and utter insanity, people. There are too many unknowns regarding its effects on the developing brain, he said. And setting the regulations won't stop people from doing it at home. But it will become a matter of buyer beware, or caveat emptor. will tell you how to use something properly. And if you choose to deviate from that, that is your choice. Sears can sell a chainsaw with perfectly good intentions that it'd only be used to cut wood. But then some idiot uses it to juggle, he says. Yeah, what a great example that is. Anyway, Gordiano named two companies represented on Sunday's meeting as exemplars of the field that it should aspire to. Halo, which is the brain-stimulating gadget for athletes that's soon to go on sale, and Soterex, which sells direct cranial stimulation units for medical and research only. These are the only two companies who are doing it right, he says. And the implication is that other companies are not doing it as well. The experimentation makes scientists nervous, of course. In a recent open letter to DIY direct cranial stimulation users, 43 leading academics pleaded with users to consider that neuroscientists are still trying to answer basic questions about how it works, and many safety issues remain unresolved. The letter noted that stimulation is not as targeted as many people assume. Don't electrocute your brain. Enhance one cognitive function may come at the cost of another, and whatever brain changes may occur may be long-lasting for better or for worse. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. And Tuesday, we have all kinds of live radio. Mr. Kevin Blanche is live up next. And then tonight at 7 p.m., Rock the Boat Radio with Ron Stevens. And I think I made those changes now in the schedule and in the banner. And at 8 p.m., a brand new Barbarian Lounge with Alan Odinson at 9. Primer Time with the boys, Michael and Nick at 10. Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson. So, all right, guys. So what is the end result of this story? Don't zippity-zap your brain. Don't get blood transfusions. And the 21st Century Cures Act is going to be on the floor for voting. And it may make the world a much scarier place. All right, guys, make sure you have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.